Separating the policy from the politics, delving deeper into what is happening in our world today, and sharing the information you may not know if you didn't listen to this show. iHub Radio presents The Lovable Liberal. This is the Anita Rufus Show, civil discourse on current events and politics. Here's Anita.
And thank you so much for joining me. This is Anita Rufus, The Lovable Liberal, and you're listening to iHub Radio. I have a guest second hour today, and you'll want to wait around for this, especially if you're a woman, because her name is Natalie Webb. She traveled all over the world as a lawyer, human rights lawyer, I believe, and she has a unique perspective on why it is so important that we support women getting into starting their own businesses, and some of the ways, the very innovative ways that are being used around the world to make a difference for helping women do business. So that'll be Natalie Webb in the second hour. I want to start with some talk about the virus. God, I'm so sick of this virus. I will tell you this. I had a reckoning this week that actually surprised me. Because I do a lot of my work from home, and I am basically a lazy slob, and I'm allergic to the sun and the heat, so I don't go outside all that much. And, you know, the last year, almost year and a half now, since March 9th, when I first started hibernating in the house because of the virus, I've looked forward to the days on the calendar with absolutely nothing there so I can just watch news and catch up on old movies and read. There are so many things that I like to do to fill my time as opposed to the things I ought to be doing, like cleaning out my closet. But I got through the pandemic pretty well. I did notice that for about the first 6 months, I cried at everything. You know, I'd watch a commercial, for heaven's sake, where people cared about each other and people came together to, you know, like the Hallmark Christmas commercial. And I would just start blubbering. I could barely stand it in the very early days of the pandemic, watching what was going on in New York City. It was horrendous, and it broke my heart, and it made me cry. But, you know, after about 6 months of that, I got better, and things got better, and then there was the point at which early this year we were able to start getting vaccinated, and I feel so much freer, and I've been able to go out to lunch occasionally with friends or out to dinner to celebrate a birthday, and I don't feel like I have to wear my mask all the time when I'm outside because I'm fully vaccinated. And by the way, just off the cuff, people who refuse to get vaccinated, not the ones who haven't gotten around to it yet because they haven't found a way to make that possible because they work three jobs and they can't take time off if they have side effects. And I mean, there's a lot of reasons that a lot of people said, no, I'm not opposed to the vaccine. I just haven't gotten it yet. And the administration is trying to make that easier for those kinds of people. But the people who say, I'm not getting vaccinated, Rand Paul, who's, I had the coronavirus, so I'm immune. Well, good luck with that in case you're not. But those people are now paying money for counterfeit vaccination cards. My attitude about that is, hey, if this is really how you feel about it, if this is the stand you want to take, then own it. Don't get a card that's made out that makes it look like you got a vaccine if you didn't. If you don't believe in it, then stand up for what you believe and own it. And if that means there are things you can't do, tough. Anyway, some people are still not getting vaccinated, at least not yet. There's about 28 million American adults who claim that they are opposed to getting vaccinated. And about 10% of our population say they are open to getting vaccinated, but they haven't yet managed to do it. They call them the vaccine amenable population. Mostly working class. They have very little free time. They may have kids and not be able to afford childcare. They can't afford to take time off work, and they've heard that, you know, there are some people for a couple of days after the shot, they have a little bit of fever or they're completely exhausted. They don't feel good. It goes away within 2 or 3 days. But these are people who can't take 2 or 3 days off work. So walk-in hours, easy to find locations that are accessible from all communities, including very rural or very poor areas of the country. The fact that the administration started getting Uber and services like that, being willing to pick people up and wait for them after they got the shot and take them back home, that helped a lot of people. And whether it's at ball games or bars or bowling alleys or shopping centers, the kinds of places that people go where you can make vaccines freely available. There are still a lot of people who think you're going to have to pay to get a shot. So the news needs to get out there more widely. We are at about 50% of the American population fully vaccinated, but that's nowhere near what they call herd immunity, where we don't have to where we don't have to worry about it anymore. Meanwhile, we're cheering because COVID infections, new infections, are below 30,000 new cases a day. Now, there's some weird thing that we have to do in our minds to get our minds around that reality. Because 30,000 cases a day sounds like a lot, but compared to what it was a year ago, it's not a lot. Meanwhile, we are rapidly nearing more than 600,000 dead Americans, dead people in our country as a result of the virus. And I read something that actually made me think. When they talk about how few cases we have now compared to what it was like a year, year and a half ago, I want you to think about something. Yes, 30,000 new cases a day doesn't even begin to compare with when we were having a million new cases a day. But that is counting the number of new cases based on the number of people who have not been vaccinated. So think about that. If half the population has been vaccinated and half has not, 30,000 new cases a day is at the very least more like 60,000 new cases a day, because you're only basing that on the half of the population that hasn't gotten vaccinated. So we need to take those numbers with a grain of salt and realize that we are nowhere near out of the woods on this. And I'm hoping now that the weather is warmer and more people are vaccinated that we won't get another surge when we get into the fall after summer is over. We can only hope. Meanwhile, the mask wars continue. Not only in the House of Representatives, where Marjorie What's-Her-Name Idiot is saying that, is comparing the idea that there is a mask mandate on the floor of the House with Hitler and the Nazis and their treatment of the Jews during World War II. Aside from the fact that that is not only stupid, but it's hopelessly ignorant, she's one of the people who refuses to say whether she got vaccinated or not. So Nancy Pelosi is quite within her rights to say, unless everybody's going to tell us their status, then we're going to keep a mask mandate going. In Nevada, the state assembly voted to strip one of its Republican members of her voting rights because she refused to wear a mask. The legislature did vote along party lines, 26-16, but their rules in their state assembly in Nevada say that a member who is found to be in violation of a rule of that body shall not vote or speak on the floor or committee except to explain and apologize for the breach until they have made satisfaction to the House for the breach. Meanwhile, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Miss Nutso, shredded the notice she got from Nancy Pelosi, and she did it on camera. And the truth is, she's raising a ton of money from people who like the fact that she's taking a stand. Now, the idea of comparing mask mandates to the Holocaust is so reprehensible that even though it took 5 days, leading Republicans have also said that what Green said was absolutely beyond the pale. And the truth is, if you think about it, the incongruity of what she's saying. The Holocaust was about genocide against people who were considered undesirable. A mask mandate is about saving lives. Where is the comparison? And what about the comparison that January 6th was considerably worse than 9/11? That argument has also been made. And you know what? 9/11 brought us together as a country and was something that was perpetrated upon us by others who wished us ill. January 6th was an insurrection, and on this show we have talked endlessly about what insurrection means. And the truth is, it was an attempt to absolutely overturn a legitimate constitutional practice having to do with transfer of power, recording the electoral votes as a result of certification by the states of the election last November. When Marjorie Taylor Greene said, vaccinated employees get a vaccination logo just like the Nazis forced Jewish people to wear, she called it a gold star, it was actually a yellow star. Gold stars are what they give you for being outstanding in class. Vaccinated employees get a vaccination logo just like the Nazis forced the Jewish people to wear a star. I don't know about you, but I haven't been tattooed with anything as a result of having gotten vaccinated. It is not only stupid, it's ignorant and it's offensive, and it is encouraging other ignorant people to think that they don't have to live up to their commitment and their responsibility to the rest of us. And if there's anything that the United States stands for, it's the kind of mutual responsibility that we have for each other.
She's lovable, she's liberal, and she's here to bring a tone of civility to political discussion you aren't likely to find anywhere else. The Anita Rufus Show, with your lovable liberal on iHub Radio. Here's Anita.
So I want to catch you up on some of the news that's been going on. If, unlike me, you don't watch the news ad nauseum, all of the cable channels and the talk radio nuts. But I do that so that you don't have to. 9 people now dead as a result of that mass shooting in San Jose yesterday. 62 mass shootings this month across the country. Now, you know, a mass shooting is considered when I believe it's four people die in the same event, and that may be including the shooter. In San Jose, the shooter shot himself. There have been, and this, when I found these statistics, it's why I wanted to lead the news portion for you, because this is beyond the ability to get my mind around it. This year, we're just almost at the end of the first 5 months of this year. There have already been 232 mass shootings in the United States in this 5 months. And so far this year, we have 7,500 people dead from shootings in this country. This has got to stop. This is insanity. Here in California, on the freeway last week, a six-year-old boy sitting in an appropriate child seat on the back seat of his mother's car was shot and killed in the booster seat because the bullet went through the trunk from behind the car. And it was a road rage incident. What on earth could that woman driving that car with her six-year-old kid in the back seat, what could she possibly have done that would have made the car behind her take out a gun and shoot into her car? Seriously. Also in the news, I don't know if you saw the pictures of these volcanoes that have been erupting around the world. The Congo and in Iceland. Now, Iceland evidently has the most active volcanoes on the planet. Congo, today, they issued the warning and started evacuating one city because they now believe that that volcano in Congo is about to erupt again. And in fact, they have found seismic activity under the lake near that city. Because the lake filled in a crater from an old inactive, supposedly, volcano. And now they think that might even erupt. If you saw the pictures, it is truly overwhelming to see those rivers of fire and molten ash. And when I say ash, I don't mean ash. I mean molten lava rocks that are burning as they roll down the roads toward these towns and wipe out people and homes and cities, and the horror of it. Mother Nature, for what it's worth, Mother Nature is not really happy with us. She's letting us know in lots of ways that we have not really been doing a very good job of taking care of this planet. And every once in a while, Mother Nature says, listen, if you think you guys are in charge, let me show you what the truth is. Now, I want to talk for a moment about the fact that our census, when it came in, raised some alarm about the fact that our birth rate here in this country has definitely plummeted. Everybody thought that because we were on lockdown 9 months after last March, oh boy, a whole bunch of babies are going to be born. Well, it turns out being locked with each other in our homes has not made us particularly sexually attractive to each other. And the birth rate is very low. In Italy, and this is going on all over the world, in Italy, they are literally closing down maternity wards. In China, they don't have enough children to continue to populate some of their cities. In Germany, Hundreds of thousands of properties have been leveled and the land is turned into parks because they don't need to build new housing because people aren't having kids. The demographics of the world are definitely changing, and we are rapidly heading toward the point where we will record more deaths than births. Countries like China, they have more old people than children. And guess what? Here in the United States, if we don't have more immigrants let into this country, we will continue to depress the birth rate. And who's going to be paying in for your Social Security when you get older? And we are all living to be older. Fertility rates are falling. And women have more access to education and to contraception and to control of their own lives. And men have not yet figured out how to have the babies. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal, on iHub Radio.
In a land so divided, she's a uniter, not a divider. This is the Anita Rufus Show, featuring the lovable liberal on iHub Radio. Here's Anita.
Okay, I'm trying to run down some of the news that you may have missed, or maybe a little bit of background on what is the news about. I was talking about lower birth rates, and it is more than just a statistic. This has implications for our future. A planet with fewer people could, in fact, ease pressure on resources. It could slow climate change. It could improve the status, especially the financial status for women. But fewer workers can upend the way societies are organized, and it could upend our ideas about families. If you have fewer young workers putting money into the system, we may need to encourage more older workers to stay in the system, because we need to produce goods and we need people to have things to go out and buy in order to continue to support the economy. And here in the United States, just as a cautionary note about this population thing, sometime over the next 10 years, in America, people over 65 could outnumber those younger than 18 for the first time in our history. This is something that needs to be addressed, and it will certainly change some of our financial policies, including how we are going to ensure that when people are ready to retire, they can get their Social Security. Now, this past week, the Senate and the House passed the Anti-Asian and Pacific Islander Addressing Hate Crimes. They passed that bill, but in the Senate, there was only one vote. This guy, Josh Hawley, who is the male version in the Senate of Marjorie Taylor Greene in the House. But in the House, 62 Republicans voted against legislation to try and address these attacks on Asian Americans. The vote was 364 to 62, all Republicans in the House. So it turns out that crimes targeting Asian Americans, which are very much attributed to the fact that the former president made a big deal out of this pandemic that destroyed so many things in our culture that we were used to, like being able to go outside and not have to wear a mask. Crimes targeting specifically Asian Americans rose by almost 150% last year. Now, according to this Josh Hawley in the Senate from Missouri, this Republican who was the only senator to vote against this legislation, he said it turns the federal government into the speech police. It gives government sweeping authority to decide what counts as offensive speech and then monitor it. And this isn't just about speech. This is about people being attacked on the street. And when it is hate-related, based on their ethnicity, that requires greater penalties. It's not the same as just deciding to push someone down. It's when you decide to push them down with absolutely no justification, merely because of the way they look, or where they came from, or where you think they came from. Representative Jim Jordan in the House, this Republican from Ohio, he's the guy who never wears a jacket. He echoed Josh Hawley, and he said that the spike in violence against Asian Americans is tied to efforts backed by Democrats and other progressives to decrease funding for police. So people are specifically targeting Asian Americans because Democrats want to change the way policing is done. I mean, that's just stupid. Now, also in the House, you had a representative from Texas named Chip Roy. And what he said was, we can't legislate away hate. Well, I beg to differ. I believe we can legislate away hate. We certainly can legislate away acts based on hate. And that's good enough for me. If it makes people hesitate to carry out some kind of hate, aggression, and physical assault, hell yes, we can legislate that. If people want to hate, fine. You got that kind of a mentality. Keep it inside yourself. Don't take it out in the world. Speaking of which, of course, we now know that anti-Semitic incidents worldwide are up sharply, largely as a result of the Palestinian and Israeli fighting that was going on. The fact is, anti-Semitic incidents in England, for example, skyrocketed almost 500%. And I do want to make this point. I'm Jewish, so I have a big investment in the safety of the country of Israel. But that doesn't require me to absolutely agree with and support the current leadership. I don't. However, I think it's important to at least be accurate about what's going on. Those who automatically say, well, Israel had to respond because Hamas, not the Palestinians themselves, but the terrorist group Hamas, which runs that part of the country, Hamas was shooting all these hundreds and even thousands of rockets into Israel, so Israel had to respond. I agree. If somebody's shooting rockets into your country, knock them down if you can and respond if you have to. But as it turns out, there was an incident that happened early on in this conflict. 27 days before the first rockets were fired into Israel from Gaza. At the beginning of the month, the holy month of Ramadan for the Muslim population, 27 days before that first rocket, Israeli police officers went into the Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem, pushed aside the Palestinian attendants at the door to the mosque, and cut the cables to the loudspeakers that broadcast their prayers to the faithful from the minarets of the Aqsa Mosque. It was the beginning of their Ramadan. They always broadcast these prayers right out of those loudspeakers. But coincidentally, it was also a day of remembrance for Israelis about something important to their culture. And because of the prayers being broadcast from the mosque over the loudspeakers, the Israelis were unable to hear their own speakers talking about this day of remembrance. So Israeli police went into the mosque and cut the cables to stop the noise. It was the first day, April 13th, of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. Now, this violence that followed all of that is reprehensible. And the number of people who were killed, especially children, the number of buildings that were destroyed, the attacks on both sides are not justifiable at all. But what the Israeli police did at that point, more than 3 weeks before the rockets started being fired, is worth at least adding to our understanding of what is going on over there. Luckily, they have agreed to a ceasefire after 11 days of fighting. And the United Nations Secretary General said, after realizing the number of people who had been killed on both sides, and particularly the number of children, especially in Gaza, the UN Secretary General said, if there is a hell on earth, it is the lives of children in Gaza. Now, hopefully the ceasefire will hold and that they will continue to have conversations to try and resolve some of the long-standing issues. But a lot of people, appropriately, were asking, whatever happened to that thing called the Abraham Accords, where President Trump sent his ace number one negotiator, Jared Kushner, over there to try and negotiate some peace? Well, if you will recall, what Jared Kushner did was notable in one way, because he did get some of the Arab countries to agree to peaceful relations with Israel, literally acknowledging that Israel exists and will hopefully continue to exist. And at the time, Kushner went to the pages of the Wall Street Journal and congratulated himself on what he called a geopolitical earthquake. In fact, he dismissed the whole Israeli-Palestinian conflict. He said it was nothing more than a real estate debate. Well, not only is that relatively simplistic, it's also wrong. Because, in fact, the Palestinians have never fully acknowledged that Israel has a right to exist. But Kushner's plan was built on the fantasy that peace could be achieved by negotiating with these other Arab countries without including representatives of the Palestinians. All of the talks that Kushner held did not include the Palestinians. And I remember at the time saying, hey, wait a minute. Well, the idea that the Palestinians would essentially forget about their grievances because of big investments that Kushner was promising to secure for Gaza and the West Bank. Hey, we're going to pour money in here and you'll all be able to have a better life. And he assumed that the Arab states would put pressure on the Palestinians to make a lasting peace with Israel. Then the Arab nations would have more leverage on Israel to moderate its stance on the Palestinians. It wasn't a totally stupid idea, but it sure as hell didn't work. None of those things happened. So whatever it was that Kushner was attempting to accomplish, as I said at the time when it was first announced and first started, if they aren't including the Palestinians in the conversation, what the hell are they hoping to achieve? I want to remind you again that coming up at 2 o'clock in the second hour, I'll be talking with Natalie Webb, who is an international human rights lawyer who has gotten extremely involved in the idea that the more we support women in being able to start their own businesses worldwide, not just in the United States, the more we make the whole world and its societies a better, more peaceful, more productive place. She'll be with me in the 2 o'clock hour. You know that you can always listen live on Thursdays at 1 to iHubRadio.com. And you can find podcasts wherever you get your podcasts.
The Lovable Liberal continues now on iHub Radio. Here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, it's been a year since the murder of George Floyd. And I have to say, it gives me a certain satisfaction to be able to call it what it was, a murder. There have been some improvements in local police procedures around the country. And there has, of course, been activism around this issue for the past year that has gone across all racial and age lines, which is good. This movement that they called Defund the Police, which I always thought should have been called Reform the Police, that's gone local. There's been an unprecedented movement to make cuts in police departments around the country to reallocate some of that money. At least 20 large U.S. cities reduced their police budgets. 25 cities ended contracts where police were operating inside schools. That isn't the job we hire police to do. Now, the truth is crime has gone up. Part of the reason for that, I believe, and there's a lot of study that is going to have to be done on this, but part of the reason is we have been locked down for so long. There's a whole lot of frustrated people who have lost their jobs, who are desperate, who are angry, who are acting out for whatever reasons. And I think that's part of the reason that crime has gone up. But the truth is there are a lot of demoralized police who have left those jobs, and recruiting has been challenging, especially in the middle of a pandemic. But this is going on around the world as well, because if you will recall, the George Floyd Black Lives Matter protests that erupted a year ago, that was worldwide. In Australia, for example, protests have highlighted the fact that the Aboriginal Australians were targeted by the police. More than 29% of the prisoners in Australian jails are Aboriginals. They're only 3% of the total population. How can 3% of the population be responsible for 30% of the crime? Come on. In France, they set up a platform online to record discriminatory police stops and banned chokeholds. Well, they reversed that decision because the powerful police unions in France said that they were going to make sure that no police showed up for work if they kept that in place. And police unions and the qualified immunity protection for police officers is something that has to be addressed. In England, Prime Minister Boris Johnson said he was going to create a commission to study all aspects of inequality in British society. But the report has already been slammed by activists because it downplays systemic racism, which we have talked about a lot on this show. Systemic racism, my shorthand version is, it doesn't mean you're racist. It means the systems and agencies and rules that govern so much of our lives, that racism is embedded in those systems. Now, the truth is, the movement has raised people's awareness about the problems. But structural change is very hard to come by. Social change takes recognition of the problem first. And we don't even agree on what the problem is. Then we have to be able to articulate what the end result is we want to end up with. Because there's lots of choices about how to accomplish that, but if we're not clear what the problem is and what we want the end result to be, can't ever get to solutions. Now, I found something that disturbed me. Almost everything on this subject disturbs me. But black children constitute 18% of preschoolers, but they are about 50% of preschoolers who are suspended. What does a preschooler have to do? I mean, we're talking about kids who are 3 and 4 years old. What do they have to do to get suspended, for heaven's sake? Latino kindergartens are less than 4 or 5 times. I'm sorry, Latino kids in kindergartens, this is 6-year-olds, are 4 or 5 times more likely to get suspended than their white peers. What are 6-year-olds doing to get suspended? Now, there are those who say that teachers need to begin to incorporate lessons about race into elementary school curriculum so that kids can overcome the images that they see far too often, both on television and in their own neighborhoods. A historian and scholar named Ibram Kendi, he said, for teachers, if they teach kids to not connect bad behavior directly to black people, it's more likely that they won't connect kids to bad behavior simply because they happen to be black. If all you ever see on TV, if the only positive images you ever get on TV of black people are the reporters showing you pictures of black people being beaten and killed, there is the implication in the minds of young people that those people are bad. Now, there are some school districts, as I said, that have removed police from their hallways. Schools are beginning to offer more mental health services to students. And for those of you who yell about what it costs to fund schools, most schools have not been able to afford mental health professionals to be there to help students. Black young people make up 14% of all young people under 18. 14% of all kids under 18 in the United States. But 42% of the boys and 35% of the girls in juvenile facilities are black. This is a problem, and it isn't solved by locking kids up. People of color are disproportionately imprisoned in this country, and they can't get a job when they get out, and it forces them back into desperate circumstances. And we need to do something about this before it destroys our society. This is Anita Rufus, the Lovable Liberal. You are listening to iHub Radio. I'll be right back with Natalie Webb.